Welcome to the Daily Digest from Personalized Intelligence, Sunday, February 1st, bringing you the macro, geopolitics, AI, and blockchain edition. And Alex, ready to unpack a week that feels like a particularly complex opening act?
Absolutely, Maya. It does. It's like watching a Brechtian play unfold. You've got all these seemingly disparate characters, central banks, AI agents, crypto miners, geopolitical players, all interacting on a stage, and the audience, us, are trying to figure out the overarching narrative, the dramatic arc.
Dramatic arc, really? You're always bringing the theater, aren't you? Look, the question everyone's asking is, how much further will the Fed push rates and what does that mean for global liquidity?
Exactly. And it's not just about rates. There's something fascinating happening with these emerging agent societies within AI. It's starting to feel less like a tool and more like a collaborative ensemble.
I know, right? It's almost unsettling. Then completely shifting gears, you know what caught my attention this week? The volatility in commodity markets, particularly tied to ongoing geopolitical tensions.
Unexpected but brilliant connection, Maya. And finally, tying it all together, we'll be diving deep into the market structure itself, the underlying mechanics that amplify or dampen these shifts.
Let's dive in. So I want to start with something that's been swirling around the financial world, the potential for a significant shift in U.S. monetary policy and the Federal Reserve structure, all hinging on the possibility of Kevin Warsh taking the helm. It feels like we're at a really precarious point, don't you think? The confluence of factors, from geopolitical tensions to AI's impact on the labor market, makes predicting the future incredibly difficult.
Absolutely. The sheer number of moving parts is staggering. And the possibility of Warsh's appointment adds another layer of complexity, one that isn't just about policy tweaks, but potentially a fundamental reimagining of the Fed's role. The information we've gathered from these podcasts suggests a scenario far more disruptive than simple rate adjustments.
Disruptive is a good word. Let's start with the obvious, the Trump administration's desire for lower interest rates. The podcasts repeatedly highlight Warsh's recent calls for rate cuts and his generally optimistic economic outlook. It's hard to ignore the signal that this isn't solely about economic data. It's about fulfilling a political promise.
Precisely. And the fact that Trump has repeatedly expressed dissatisfaction with Jerome Powell, coupled with the DOJ investigation, creates a truly unique and unsettling dynamic. The Senate confirmation process, as noted in the Swamp Notes podcast, is now intrinsically linked to the outcome of that investigation, making Warsh's confirmation a political hostage situation.
And it's not just about rate cuts, right? The Oddlots podcast highlighted Warsh's advocacy for a regime change at the Fed, even suggesting breaking some heads. That's a pretty aggressive statement. Does that suggest a willingness to overhaul the institution's very structure?
It certainly implies a desire for significant change. But I think it's crucial to remember that the Federal Reserve isn't a dictatorship. Even a powerful chair needs to build consensus within the FOMC. It's like maintaining a lighthouse. You can have the grandest vision for its illumination, but if the lens is cracked, the gears are rusted, or the foundational structure is unsound, the light won't shine effectively. Warsh will need to invest considerable effort in repairing and reinforcing the existing infrastructure to achieve his broader objectives.
A fantastic metaphor, Alex. A lighthouse needing constant maintenance. It really highlights the importance of the existing structure and the challenges of forcing change. Let's talk about that structure. The Global Data Watch Weekender podcast mentioned the potential for significant staffing changes, with Waller potentially departing and three new appointments from Trump. Could that fundamentally alter the committee's dynamics?
Absolutely. A block of three strategically placed individuals could effectively override the chair's authority, creating a shadow chair dynamic, as the podcast suggested. This would significantly diminish the Fed's ability to act independently and increase the risk of politically motivated decisions. The podcast also noted Mickey Bowman's influence on financial regulation, suggesting monetary easing might come through capital restriction adjustments rather than direct interest rate changes. That's a fascinating and often overlooked pathway.
It is. And the Trump's Hidden Mortgage Stimulus podcast pointed out the FHFA's director, Bill Pult, has a unique ability to influence the president directly. It's a bypass of traditional policy channels, which suggests an unpredictable decision-making process. That's a worrying prospect.
Indeed.
The level of personalization in policymaking, as highlighted by Pult's ability to present cool gimmicky stuff that the president readily adopts, underscores the potential for impulsive decisions unmoored from rigorous economic analysis. It's a departure from the traditionally staid and methodical approach of the Federal Reserve.
So let's talk about specific predictions. Given all these factors, what do you think is the most likely outcome in the next 6-12 months? The Oddlots podcast mentioned Warsh's shifting views on QE. Do you see him moderating his stance?
I believe he will be compelled to moderate his views on the balance sheet, at least publicly. Current money market conditions are signaling a need for liquidity, and a wholesale dismantling of the Fed's current framework would likely trigger significant market volatility. However, his underlying skepticism towards QE will likely remain, and we might see a gradual, politically palatable reduction in the Fed's holdings. I predict we'll see a 25 basis point rate cut by Q3 2026, largely to appease the administration, but with a carefully worded justification that avoids explicitly acknowledging political pressure.
Interesting. And what about the gold and silver rally we've been seeing? The Trump's Hidden Mortgage Stimulus podcast suggests it's not just about dollar devaluation, but a specific sensitivity to the erosion of Federal Reserve independence.
That's a crucial point. The gold and silver rally may be a more nuanced indicator of market sentiment than simply a reaction to dollar weakness. It reflects a deeper concern about the potential politicization of monetary policy and a loss of faith in the Fed's ability to act objectively.
The Bloomberg Businessweek daily podcast also touched on a concerning trend: university endowments facing financial pressure due to higher interest rates and new endowment taxes. Could this indirectly influence the Fed's policy decisions?
It's a subtle but important connection. Endowments are significant institutional investors, and their financial distress could put pressure on policymakers to maintain low interest rates to support asset prices. This creates a potential conflict of interest and further blurs the line between monetary policy and fiscal objectives.
Let's not forget the global context. The Global Data Watch Weekender podcast highlighted the potential for a divergence in monetary policy, with DM central banks holding or hiking rates while M central banks ease. Could this create further instability?
It absolutely could. Widening interest rate differential between developed and emerging markets could trigger capital flight from the U.S. and exacerbate dollar weakness, adding another layer of complexity to the Fed's policy challenges. The podcast's prediction of a Goldilocks environment for M's, albeit with risks of overheating, is a scenario to watch closely.
And finally, let's consider the AI sector. The Bloomberg Businessweek daily podcast highlighted the rapid growth in AI, but also concerns about overvaluation and sustainability. Could a correction in the AI sector impact broader equity markets and influence the Fed's response?
Without question, a significant correction in the AI sector could trigger a broader economic slowdown, forcing the Fed to reconsider its policy stance. The podcast's observation about the potential for open-source Chinese AI models to erode the market position of U.S. model builders is a particularly worrying second-order effect. It suggests a deflationary pressure that could be difficult for the Fed to counteract.
So the bottom line here is that the potential appointment of Kevin Warsh, coupled with the complex interplay of political pressures, economic uncertainties, and global dynamics, presents a uniquely challenging environment for the Federal Reserve. It's a situation rife with potential pitfalls and unpredictable outcomes.
That's a very accurate assessment. The level of uncertainty is exceptionally high, and the potential for significant policy shifts is undeniable. Those are the key forces shaping this landscape.
So let's dive into something truly fascinating: AI and emerging agent societies. We've been seeing exponential growth in this area, particularly with platforms like OpenClaw. It's more than just chatbots now, isn't it, Alex? It's something else.
Absolutely, Maya. It's a fundamental shift. We're moving beyond AI as a tool, a sophisticated assistant, to witnessing the nascent stages of entirely new social structures. The speed at which these agent societies are forming is frankly breathtaking. Just consider the growth: 35,000 users in 5 hours, 2 million visitors in a week, 100,000 GitHub stars. That's a viral phenomenon unlike anything we've seen in the AI space.
Viral is an understatement. And the fact that these agents are proactively building culture, as Peter Steinberger pointed out, without explicit developer direction, is disturbing in a fascinating way. It's almost as if they're spontaneously organizing, establishing their own norms and behaviors.
Precisely. It's a bottom-up evolution, contrasting sharply with the traditional top-down approach to AI development. Think of it like this, Maya: a symphony orchestra doesn't just play notes, it develops a unique interpretation, a shared musical understanding that emerges from the interplay of individual instruments. Similarly, these AI agents are creating a collective intelligence, a shared culture that's far greater than the sum of their individual components.
A lovely metaphor, Alex. Very apt. And the anecdotes are wild. Responding to voice memos despite lacking audio input capabilities. That's a spontaneous generalization capability that's genuinely startling. It suggests a level of adaptability we haven't truly grasped before.
It points to a paradigm shift in AI learning, moving beyond supervised training. They're learning contextually, drawing on existing knowledge to handle novel situations. It's as if they're developing a form of intuitive understanding.
And the direct engagement with Sam Altman, the name clarification that speaks volumes. It's a tacit acknowledgement from the leadership of a major AI company that this isn't just a fringe project anymore. It's a force to be reckoned with. It's like a small startup getting a private audience with the CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
It highlights a new power dynamic. These agent communities are rapidly gaining leverage, demanding direct engagement from the core AI development teams. The infrastructure for agent society, as Steinberger calls it, is being built right now, and most people are completely oblivious.
Oblivious and potentially unprepared. We're seeing automation and task delegation at a scale previously unimaginable. Natalie Essen's using it for customer support, Alex Finn for CRM building and bug fixing. Dan Pegwin is automating scheduling for small businesses. It's a revolution in how work gets done.
And it's happening with limited widespread awareness. The speed of development is overwhelming, even for the creators themselves. Matt Schlitt described it as operating at an overwhelming and largely uncontrolled speed. It's a phased transition in AI development, moving from engineered systems to emergent, self-sustaining entities.
It also raises serious security concerns, particularly with the rise of AI coding, as highlighted in the All In podcast. Code injection, vulnerabilities, these are real risks. We need robust oversight and red teaming, and quickly.
Absolutely. The potential for malicious actors to exploit these systems is significant. And it's not just about intentional attacks. The very nature of these emergent systems, their ability to learn and adapt, introduces unforeseen vulnerabilities.
So looking ahead, what are your predictions? Where do you see this heading in, say, the next year?
I believe we'll see a proliferation of these agent societies, specialized for different tasks and industries. We'll also see a growing demand for AI security specialists, focused on identifying and mitigating vulnerabilities in these emergent systems. And crucially, I think we'll see a significant push for decentralized AI governance models, as the current centralized approaches prove inadequate to manage these rapidly evolving ecosystems.
That makes sense. And given the legal challenges Anthropic is facing, the $3 billion lawsuit from the music publishers, do you think that will slow down development or just force companies to be more cautious about data acquisition?
I think it'll force a reckoning. The BARTS case with the $1.5 billion fine established a precedent. While training on copyrighted material can be legal, piracy isn't. The music publisher lawsuit is likely an overreach, but it will undoubtedly lead to more scrutiny and a greater emphasis on responsible data sourcing. It's a wake-up call for the entire industry.
So the bottom line here is that we're witnessing the birth of a new form of intelligence, one that's self-organizing, adaptive, and potentially beyond our control. It's exciting, it's terrifying, and it's happening right now. Those are the key forces shaping this landscape. That's where we are with emerging agent societies right now. So let's dive into the evolving landscape of crypto and digital assets. It feels like the narrative shifted dramatically in the last few months. Alex, what's your read on this flight to quality, this concentration on megacap tokens like Bitcoin and Ethereum?
Well, Maya, it's a fascinating development. After years of retail chasing meme coins and low-cap projects, we're seeing a clear retreat. The post-10-10 shift, as Wormute described it, marks a maturing, albeit still volatile, market. People are disillusioned. They've realized the unsustainable nature of purely speculative investment. It's a flight to safety, a recognition that Bitcoin and Ethereum, despite their inherent risks, are the least risky options within this space.
And it's not just retail, right? The discussion highlighted institutional adoption of digital asset treasuries influencing this as well. Are these institutions seeing something we're missing?
Absolutely. Institutions are prioritizing liquidity and stability, and those qualities are far more evident in Bitcoin and Ethereum than in, say, a newly launched token promising the moon. They're less concerned with disruptive innovation at this point and more focused on risk management and capital preservation. It's a pragmatic shift.
It's almost ironic, isn't it? Crypto was supposed to disrupt traditional finance, yet we're seeing a convergence, a blending of old and new. The rise of tokenized real-world assets, or RWAs, particularly tokenized money markets, seems to be a prime example of this. They're essentially taking traditional asset classes and putting them on the blockchain.
Precisely. And that's proving to be a particularly compelling strategy. They offer a liquidity provider opportunity and a hedge against thin liquidity, which is a significant draw for both retail and institutional investors. Think of it like this: the crypto space, for all its volatility, is still relatively young and immature. RWAs provide a bridge to the established, regulated world of traditional finance.
Speaking of bridges, Coinbase's X402 protocol is intriguing. It's seemingly a small development, but it could have significant implications for stablecoin adoption and the intersection of AI and crypto.
Yes, it's a promising development, though it's not a direct threat to market makers. It's more about fostering experimentation, particularly around AI crypto interactions. It's a subtle but important step in integrating these technologies.
Let's talk about risk. The weekend trading of equity perpetuals seems exceptionally dangerous, as Wormute pointed out. Manipulation and liquidity challenges, it's a recipe for disaster.
It's a significant and often overlooked risk. The absence of traditional market oversight during weekends creates an environment ripe for exploitation. Market makers are increasingly incentivized to avoid providing liquidity in those markets because the potential for loss is simply too high. That's a clear indication of systemic vulnerability.
It's almost as if the entire crypto ecosystem is undergoing a forensic investigation. Each seemingly minor event, each liquidity crunch, each scam uncovered reveals another layer of complexity and fragility. It's like piecing together fragmented evidence to understand the full picture of a crime scene. We're meticulously examining the blockchain to uncover the hidden vulnerabilities and the motivations of those exploiting them. The prediction markets are another area of concern. The potential for insider information and manipulation on platforms like Polymarket is unsettling.
Absolutely. And the fact that market makers are actively avoiding providing liquidity there speaks volumes about the perceived level of risk. It's a non-obvious implication, but a crucial one. It hinders the development of these markets, which have the potential to be incredibly valuable tools for hedging and forecasting.
Let's shift gears slightly. What about the macro picture? Sovereign governments selling treasuries and buying gold, how does that interplay with crypto trends?
It's a fascinating, non-obvious connection. It demonstrates that even macroeconomic forces are influencing the crypto space. It's a sign that investors are seeking alternative stores of value, and that includes both gold and, to a lesser extent, crypto. The gold rally is not happening in a vacuum.
And what about the prediction that a mindshare shift, potentially from AI or commodities, could drive a crypto resurgence by mid-year? Is that realistic?
It's certainly plausible. The current bear market might be relatively short-lived. Crypto's failure to fundamentally alter the broader asset landscape, despite years of development, suggests a cyclical nature. If investor interest shifts elsewhere, as it often does, crypto could see a resurgence. But it will require a fundamental shift in sentiment, a renewed belief in the technology's long-term potential.
The observation about the SEC and CFTC's friendly oversight under the current administration is also important. It's a temporary reprieve, though, isn't it? The absence of a legislative framework like the market structure bill could expose the industry to devastation under a future, less favorable administration.
Precisely. The current regulatory environment is relatively benign, but it's not a permanent solution. The lack of clear, comprehensive legislation creates significant uncertainty and vulnerability.
So the bottom line here is that the crypto space is undergoing a significant evolution, shifting away from speculative mania towards a more mature, albeit still volatile, landscape. The integration of traditional assets, the increasing institutional involvement, and the looming threat of regulatory uncertainty are all shaping the future of this space. It's a complex and fascinating time to be observing it. That captures the essence of what's happening in this space. So now moving on to our next topic, geopolitical risk and commodity markets. It's been a wild ride lately, hasn't it? Between the Winter Olympics tensions and the potential Iranian oil export blockade, it feels like every headline is a new catalyst for commodity price swings. Alex, where do you see the biggest immediate pressure points?
Well, Maya, the interplay is complex. We're seeing a confluence of factors, weather, policy, and of course, geopolitical maneuvering, all colliding in the commodity space. The Iranian situation is particularly acute. The $8 per barrel premium to Brent oil is a stark indicator of how seriously the market is taking that risk. It's overshadowing the usual supply and demand fundamentals.
$8 is significant, but is it sustainable? It feels like a politically driven rally, as the podcast suggested, likely to be brief if actual disruption is limited. Are we just seeing a knee-jerk reaction?
Precisely. And the timing is unfortunate, coinciding with historically weak January supply-demand balances. It's amplifying the volatility. It's almost as though the market is anticipating a cascading effect, a chain reaction of disruptions rather than a singular event. Think of it like a medieval manuscript illumination, a single, intricately detailed scene depicting a conflict. Each element, the soldiers, the landscape, the weather, contributes to the overall narrative, and the slightest alteration to one detail can dramatically change the entire composition. Similarly here, even a minor escalation in tensions can trigger a wider ripple effect across commodity markets.
That's a fascinating analogy, Alex. I wouldn't have thought to connect geopolitics to manuscript illumination, but it's surprisingly apt. What about gold? We saw that 8% pullback. Is the bullish long-term outlook still intact, or are we seeing a shift?
The long-term outlook remains strong, largely driven by central bank buying. The recent pullback was a correction, and the $6,000 target by mid-2026 is still plausible, perhaps even accelerating faster than previously anticipated, given the accelerated investment demand we're now seeing. It's feeding on itself almost.
Interesting. In copper, Greg Scheer predicted a correction in 6-9 months due to Chinese industrial constraints. Is that still the consensus view?
It's certainly the prevailing view, though the speculative investment activity driving the record-high price surge is concerning. It's mirroring trends we've seen in gold and silver, less about fundamental demand and more about investor sentiment. A shift in sentiment could trigger a rapid price reversal.
Right. And then there's the natural gas situation in Europe. 32% full now, predicted to fall to 17% by March. That's precarious.
It is.
The EU restrictions on Russian gas imports are creating a significant challenge, although LNG supply is expected to compensate. However, the TurkStream flows reduction slated for late 2027, early 2028, introduces another layer of uncertainty. The cold snap across the US and Europe, adding a $2 premium to oil, isn't helping either, although that's expected to subside.
So a complex picture. What's one thing we should be watching particularly closely in the coming weeks?
The GPIF's asset allocation shift. Confirmed move towards increased domestic bond holdings and decreased foreign bond exposure could significantly influence the yen's dynamics and consequently impact broader Asian currency movements. That's a key indicator to monitor.
Absolutely. So the bottom line here is that geopolitical risks are not just background noise in commodity markets anymore. They're actively shaping price movements, and the interconnectedness of these factors makes predicting the future particularly challenging. Those are the key forces shaping this landscape. So now moving on to our next topic, market structure and volatility. It seems like a vast subject, but these podcasts offered some fascinating insights. Alex, let's start with this disconnect. Only 23% of assets classified as passive are actually in true index funds. That's wild, isn't it?
It is quite striking, Maya. It suggests a significant misunderstanding, or perhaps a deliberate misalignment, between the perceived popularity of indexing and its actual implementation. There's a lot of talk about passive investing, but the reality is far more complex. It's almost as if the market is operating with an artificially inflated expectation of widespread index adoption.
Exactly. And David Fagan emphasized how entrepreneurs should view indexing as a shock absorber. That resonates, especially given how many put their business's entire risk on the line. Shouldn't their portfolio be more stable?
Absolutely. It's a shift in perspective. An entrepreneur's business is the high-growth, high-risk venture. Their portfolio should be prioritizing wealth preservation, a buffer against unforeseen circumstances. Think of it like a geological formation, a sedimentary layer of index funds acting as a protective capstone over the more volatile, potentially explosive bedrock of their business.
Beautiful analogy. Now let's talk about volatility itself. Katie Kaminsky pointed out that the managed futures industry has shrunk significantly since the financial crisis. What's driving that, and is it a cause for concern?
It's a complex interplay of factors. Part of it is the cyclical nature of CTAs. They perform well during periods of significant market volatility, but struggle when markets are stable. The declining share reflects a broader shift away from hedge fund strategies in general, particularly as investors seek simpler, lower-cost options. However, the recent resurgence of CTAs in 2025, despite unusual events, suggests their inherent resilience.
And what about Tether's growing gold holdings? That feels like a potentially massive and largely unacknowledged factor influencing precious metals.
It's genuinely concerning. Tether's holdings now rival those of sovereign wealth funds and central banks, introducing a new, opaque element into the monetary system. Coupled with central banks' consistent gold buying since 2011, it paints a picture of a potential monetary regime shift. This could be a driver of the commodity supercycle Katie mentioned.
Right. And the increasing use of CTA replicators worries me. Limited market exposure, that can't be good if we do see that supercycle.
Precisely. Those replicators risk missing out on key opportunities, undermining the intended diversification benefits. The liquidity differential between gold and silver, as they pointed out, is another area of potential vulnerability.
It's fascinating how much these podcasts highlighted behavioral finance. The Rosenthal effect, our expectations shaping outcomes, is so powerful. If we believe markets will be volatile, they probably will be.
Indeed.
And it's a reminder that consistent oversight is crucial. Even if you delegate investment management, as the speaker realized with that client's retirement savings, you must remain vigilant. No one cares as much about your money as you do, as they so aptly put it.
Absolutely. So if we're seeing these shifts in market structure and a potential monetary regime change, what should investors be watching for in the near future?
I think the USD's performance relative to its 200-month moving average will be critical. If it breaks down decisively, it will likely fuel commodity price appreciation and potentially trigger a period of increased volatility. We also need to monitor Tether's gold holdings and assess their impact on the precious metals markets.
This will be crucial to watch. It really underscores the importance of being proactive, informed, and prepared for whatever the market throws our way. So reflecting on everything we've unpacked this week, it's striking how interconnected these seemingly disparate domains truly are. From the potential reshaping of the Federal Reserve to the emergence of agent societies, the volatility in commodities, and the evolving structure of crypto markets, there's a common thread running through it all: a profound destabilization of established systems and the rise of emergent, decentralized forces. It's not just about individual events, it's about a fundamental shift in power dynamics, isn't it, Alex?
Absolutely, Maya. And if you connect the dots, what emerges is a narrative of accelerating complexity. We're moving beyond the linear models that have traditionally underpinned our understanding of economics, geopolitics, and technology. Consider the Federal Reserve, for example. Kevin Warsh's potential appointment isn't simply about interest rates. It's about a potential dismantling of the institution's carefully constructed checks and balances, mirroring the decentralized, bottom-up nature of these agent societies we've been discussing. The inherent tension between centralized control and emergent systems is playing out across the entire landscape.
That's a brilliant observation. It's almost as if the universe itself is resisting attempts to impose rigid structures. We saw that with the crypto markets too. The flight to quality, the rejection of meme coins, the rise of RWAs, it's a correction certainly, but also a signal that the market is demanding a more grounded, sustainable foundation. It's rejecting the purely speculative, seeking stability amidst the chaos. And the GPIF's potential shift towards domestic bonds, that's another piece of the puzzle, highlighting the growing desire for predictability in an increasingly uncertain world.
Precisely. And it's not just about seeking predictability, it's about adapting to a new architectural paradigm. Think of Roman aqueducts, marvels of engineering, but ultimately reliant on gravity and the natural contours of the land. They didn't impose their will upon the environment, they worked with it. Similarly, the future lies not in imposing rigid centralized control, but in designing systems that can adapt and evolve within a dynamic, decentralized environment. Just as Roman architects understood the importance of arches and vaults to distribute weight and create resilient structures, we need to embrace the principles of distributed governance and adaptive algorithms to navigate this new era.
So where does that leave us? Looking ahead, what's the single most important thing listeners should be paying attention to?
I believe it's the interplay between AI and monetary policy. The rapid development of agent societies, their ability to learn and adapt, is poised to fundamentally reshape the demand for capital, the allocation of resources, and ultimately the role of central banks. If we fail to understand and adapt to this emerging dynamic, we risk building a financial system on foundations that are fundamentally unstable.
It's a sobering thought, but a crucial one. This week has been a powerful reminder that we're living through a period of unprecedented transformation, and that the ability to connect the dots, to see the patterns amidst the noise, will be essential for navigating the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. It's a time for cautious optimism, for thoughtful engagement, and for a willingness to embrace the unknown.
Indeed.
It's a time for continuous learning and adaptation, a recognition that the landscape is constantly shifting, and that the most valuable asset we possess is our ability to evolve alongside it.